Hi, it's another glorious Sunday afternoon here in Asheville. Beautiful fall day. This is Wordplay, your program by, about, for, et cetera, poets, writers, artists, and artists of language, their craft and ideas. I'm your host today, Jeff Davis. Joining me in the studio, Hope Reinhart. Audrey Hope Reinhart, who has graduated from UNC's Asheville's Literature and Language Program back in 2004. She's been a featured reader at both the Velcro and Fresh Air reading series. She's worked as on the editorial staff for the literary anthology Lake of the Dead Sessions in 2006 and was recently published in Metabolism. She also helps organize a monthly reading series based out of the Flood Fine Arts Center in Asheville's River Arts District. Thanks so much for coming in today, Hope.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't we just jump in? Let's read a poem.
Okay. I would first like to read the newest thing I have. It's on about its third or fourth revision, so it should still change somewhat.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't have a name yet, but maybe someone who's listening to the show can give me a suggestion.
There you go.
You never gave me the locket. It found me 2 years after you left, your home empty as an old mouth, gaping, full of broken teeth. We cleaned the drawers for weeks, could not sponge away the past or the life it once contained, earth musk of mildew and linens. You never gave me the locket. It slipped from the cracked celluloid box into my hand, smooth as a soul slipping from the light of this world. I never knew you really, too humble to talk about yourself, all night cooking, steaming the kitchen windows with pickling, while I soothed my adolescence on your viney porch, watching the discus moon blossom over a scorched cornfield. You wore the locket with a checkered dress of indefinable color. A black and white photo attests it, a picture labeled honeymoon. You stand on a boat overlooking water, wind blowing back dark hair. As though you were a fan of movies, your life a reel spinning that moment always. In another image, blurred with coffee rings, you stand licking a batter spoon. Eyes softened with the elegance of middle age, the locket dangling over a pot. I captured you inside the locket, ghost between two silver clasps. With lips the color of plums, you smile at the camera, my father, a bald baby on your lap. I do not look like either parent. I have a strong jaw, a bony nose, Slavic hips that curve more every year. What was your maiden name? Why do your hands reach out to me in dreams? Why do I curse these thick thighs, these senses born to love the scent of sausages? I know just how long to boil a soup. To live is to watch the meat cook from the bone. To live is to watch the drippings rise to the surface, oil beads like tiny lens to view a richer history. I wore the locket for years, only took it off to bathe. I wore it to high school, graduation, to college, the lean years in between when I ate only beans. You were one quarter who I am. You smiled with plums on your lips, with wind in your hair. You cooked all night and rarely slept. You never gave me the locket. We were throwing your things away at random. Mostly, there was no meaning in them. Seams of shirts, elastic strips, hairpins. It gave itself over like your life yielding to a peculiar gravity. The celluloid box fell apart in my hands.
Very nice.
Thank you. Nice. Thank you very much.
To your grandmother, I gather.
Well, it's a little bit, it's been elaborated upon and fictionalized somewhat.
Yeah, that might have been the initial occasion, but it's become a story on its own.
Yes, yeah. It's developed from, I did inherit a locket from my grandmother.
Uh-huh.
She has not passed away.
Mm-hmm.
She is an older lady now.
Mm-hmm.
However, the pictures, that's fictionalized.
Yeah. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. Well, read us another one.
Okay. I'm going to read something a little lighter. This isn't, I think most Asheville-ians will know someone that this applies to. It's called Poem for a Best Friend. When he cuts off the dreadlocks finally, calls himself by his birth name, when he divvies up the sacraments of his loud wardrobe among friends, stays home all Sunday, learns to broil a chicken to delight a wife, when he folds his sheets, folds his shorts, discards the used threads of dental floss that dangle like sphagnum from the faucet, scrapes the beard shards from the drain, then he will be less like me, less like the person who offends me.
Yes, here in Asheville, we all have friends.
And we all know each other's friends as well. Right. We're like a big extended family.
Oh, well, very nice. Very nice. How do you work when you're writing? Do you work at a keyboard or do you work with a pen, pencil?
Well, I do a variety of those things. I don't believe in divine inspiration. I'm a relatively disciplined writer. I carry paper and pencil with me at all times. Uh-huh. And when I have 20, 30 minutes, I try to record impressions of things. It could be people around me or a room or just a memory. Any sort of an impression. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I like to record an impression that is in another voice that is not my own. And after about 2 weeks, you can take those notes and find within them the bones of a poem. And I take those bones and flesh them over, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 revisions until I finally have something that I feel is coherent and stands alone.
Uh-huh. So you're not a first thought, best thought.
Oh no. Oh no. No, no, no.
Yeah, and neither am I. I also revise, gather things, you know, snippets of this.
Let it stew.
Observations about that. Yes. Yeah. Let them marinate together for a while.
It makes, brings out the divine flavors in
that's
the stew.
That's right. Indeed. Indeed. Oh, very nice. How long have you been writing? How did you come to writing?
Well, I was always a very literary child. My family exposed me to books very young. I remember my father reading to me on his lap when I was so little. I didn't even understand what words were. And probably by the time I was about 5 years old, I knew I wanted to make books.
Mm-hmm. Already
and
at five.
At five, I wanted to make books. And I took typing paper that my mother gave me and stapled them together and drew pictures and made captions. And though I'm certain they made very little sense, it was important to me.
Sure.
And I've always done it. I don't think I could separate living from recording.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just
you've just been doing it from the beginning since you learned language.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's good. Good. That's Most poets do begin early, I think, or at least by high school. If you're not writing by high school, you have a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah.
Well, who were some writers who were significant for you as you were learning to write, to channel this?
It changed year upon year.
Mm-hmm.
When I was very young, I loved the sing-song rhythms of romantic poets, and that was what I grew up on. Keats, Byron, Shelley, Tennyson. I loved Tennyson.
Ah, yes. Into the Valley of Death rode the 600.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes. Charge of the Light Brigade.
Yes, yes.
As I got older, I started to find that I connected more with female feminist poets. I definitely love Anne Sexton, the work of Anne Sexton.
Oh, really?
Sylvia
yeah.
Plath. Nikki Giovanni, revolutionaries of their time, mm-hmm. who really sort of broke down barriers for the voices, bringing out the voices of women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're often dismissed today as confessional, quote-unquote, poets, you know, as, you know, but, yeah. But
you're right. Politically, yeah. Confessional means a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, but you're right, they did open new territories. Yeah.
And I think
especially
too,
for women poets.
Definitely, right. Definitely. Right. Especially in that time period where...
Yeah. I mean, we're talking the 60s here. Yeah.
Very daring work. Beautiful, daring work.
Yeah. I mean, it was still the era when the new criticism and so on was still uh-huh. a real, you know, force.
Yes,
the,
yes.
Yeah, in terms of the study of poetry and poetics. Ah. Yeah, yeah. Seems like a long time ago now, but... I mean, because right about the time that Plath and Sexton came along, we also had the New American Poetry, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and which kind of blew the doors off, you know, in a different way. But mm-hmm. Yeah, they were all part of the same uprising or whatever of new voices.
Something I also see and value in that style of work is this sense of reaching down into language or forcing the reader to reach down into the language and extract a meaning all their own. Sometimes I feel in very contemporary work, sometimes the meaning is just laid out there for us. Mm-hmm. And though that can be wonderful and does serve its own purpose and brings value to the work, it can take away from the emotional experience, the personalizing of the poem.
Hmm. Do you think it's too transparent?
It can be, mm-hmm, for yeah. some people.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Interesting. Well, let's talk some more about that. But we're, in the meantime, we have to identify ourselves here. We're WPVM LP Asheville, 103.5 on your radio dial. And this is Wordplay, your program by and about poets, writers, et cetera, et cetera. All those good things. Thank you. That's Jeffrey Keyser's The Horsewoman from his album Falling Up. The Mountain Area Information Network, a nonprofit operating to preserve public media ownership, and WPVM, your local community radio station, are here for you and seeking your involvement. Help foster local voices in the media. Get involved to protect your freedom to information and freedom of speech. Help keep local voices heard on your airwaves and corporate ownership out. If you have the time, a skill to contribute, or creative ideas to share, get in touch. Email volunteer@wpvm.org. Maine and WPVM need what you have to offer. Hope you've got some events coming up at the Flood Gallery.
Yes, yes. I just wanted to announce that on Sunday, October 28th at 2 p.m., the Flood Fine Arts Center, located in the Phil Mechanic Studios at 109 Roberts Street, will have a reading series featuring Selah Satterstrom, Eric Chechino, and tentatively Kathy Godfrey. I hope to see everyone there.
What's the date on that again?
October 28th. That is a Sunday at 2 p.m. Admission is free.
That's about a month from today.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Good. Good. Okay. Those are really interesting readings. I know I called last week's, and that was a nice occasion. A. Van Jordan, Glennis Redmond.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And Julian Boris. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good reading and a good crowd.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I thought there were, about 80 people or something
there
like that?
There were probably around 80. We had to bring out probably 15 more chairs. Yeah. 20 more chairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really exciting to see that turnout.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. It's been going, what, now about 9 months, I guess, 10 months?
We're going into our
10th
month.
End of the 10th month. That's right. Yes. The first one was at the end of 2006.
Uh-huh. In December.
Yeah. That's right. On the 22nd, as I recall.
I wasn't that sharp to remember the date, but I remember.
Yeah. Well, do turn out for that. You know, who have you had there over the past 10 months?
Oh, my goodness. We've had
lots
so many people. We've had Lynette James, Jessica Clark, just all kinds of people, whole variety of people from different backgrounds. We're really looking to represent the diversity of voices in our writing community. We want to kind of emphasize the importance of work that can stand alone as powerful on the written page without really requiring the charisma of a performer to carry the theme. In other words, we love to hear people read as people, not as performers.
Not as performers.
And of course, some people will read that way.
Sure. Some people do perform, basically, your poetry. That's the nature of the beast. Yes. Yeah.
We just like the human. We really look for the human aspect and a variety in our readers, ages, cultures, races, everyone.
All those, Well, good, good. Yeah, it's turned out to be a really good series. So congratulations to you on
thank you.
On putting that together.
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, let's hear another poem.
Okay. How about Scenes from Far Away? This is a relevant poem.
A relevant poem?
Yes.
Ooh.
I actually wrote this after started working on this after one of the Flood readings back in the spring. And I've worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. After the reading, I wanted to drink coffee in an unfamiliar cafe. Strong, unfamiliar coffee, and run my hands over some pocked table. I wanted to sit in a booth overlooking railroad tracks strewn with bottles and not recall the sounds of home. But here in Asheville, it is the loud highway, the dirty street that horseshoes in front of my house, and the crows dip and swell over a broken gray lawn. Winter expelled its placenta finally in one whoop that cursed us a 2-inch snow. The day before, the earth smelled salty of mushrooms or sick bed. We drove to the top of a mountain where the ridgeline is white and sharp as a set of dentures. We watched our hours dissolve to night with its million eyes and amniotic hue. When the coyotes started their brisk caveats, we waited for the clouds to move. I dreamt they tore down the house off Johnston, the one with the crusted linoleum and the branching mold. I was a fetus afloat in an orange bubble in an apartment behind Main Street when the pear trees were heavy with blossoms. When the bubble broke, I could not stand, though a ghost called out from behind the door. I dreamt I bathed in the flowers of pear trees in Riverside Cemetery between the tombs of Judas and Pericles. When the poet spoke, I thought of the ignorant highway collapsing within my body. I thought of the hateful crows, long mountains, the miles between myself and desert. When she spoke, I thought of this city, from the sky above it, from a plane window flying to Houston. I thought of this city as a speck on a microscope's lens, marring our view of a cricket's leg. I thought of myself standing against a grain of mountain, life quaking upon me like the motions of cells in the body. There are days when your skin is ancient, when the sun burgeons in its authority, so we are scouted out like precious stones. We are fossils, our eyes puckered, our faces filled with sand. Tell me what is history. Tell me how to make my own. Tell me how to become a citizen of my own vision, how to pick the sand from my skin and reveal a resurrection, how to raise my temple up on a lean plain among cacti and coyote. Tell me before I build here my altar from the sap of blossoms between the tombs of no one and none. Urgency crawls beneath my skin, kicks and rolls like a child in the dark folds of my organs. How do I make myself a child again, bending across the leaf-strewn bones of Appalachia? How do I go back farther to make my life a softer static on a different channel? How do I reach beyond my heart, as though reaching through a curtain, to select the hour and place of my birth? How do I open the heart to dig and discard its bruises like black on an apple's flesh? When the poet spoke, I wanted to see the desert, to taste its salt dried in the crook of my elbow. I wanted to hold my mother's hand and walk as far as fear permitted. I wanted to move across the land as a lizard, as a gull, as a monster that drags her gravid belly toward the dream of a different coast. I wanted to go back into my dreams, pull away the sticky voices of sleep, as though they were scabs from healed skin, bury them in the cells of men. I have crossed the bone teeth of mountain, straddled railroad ties and dreamed of blossoms. It has all been about the flying, the moving, the painting of my mind across a new medium. When the poet spoke, she promised the birth of the mind from a different womb, from the beautiful, strange heart of the stars. She promised a temple that cannot be moved and a home that knows no longing.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Kind of interesting merging of inner and outer worlds and, vividness of imagery. I noticed that's actually a prose poem.
Yes.
Do you work as in prose much? I mean, is that something you enjoy?
It's something I very rarely do, though. Recently, I've been working with longer lines, longer lines, bringing more richness into my language. I really love spare words, mm-hmm. and I find that what we love the most is what we should try to move away from
sometimes
in order to grow.
Yeah, often, right. But that's very interesting. I mean, you can hear, it would be easy to parse it into lines. I mean, it has the rhythms have certain shifts and points of termination that you could actually just say, well, that's a line, it's very nice. Did you write that for a class, or did you just try to write that because it was difficult for you or something you didn't want to do?
It was something I felt I needed to do.
Needed to do
for my own growth.
Yeah.
Ironically, the poems I wrote as a college student are very disappointing to me now.
Oh, I'm shocked. Often the case, I think. Yeah, right. Well, that's very interesting, though, and different from other work of yours that I've heard.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Is that a recent piece?
Yes, it is. It's I finished it, or I'm in a state of finishing it still. Mm-hmm. It does need some additional revision, I feel, but I finished it, quote unquote, mm-hmm. probably about 2 months ago.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So indeed. Very recent for me.
Very recent, indeed. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Who's your model in terms of prose poetry? Do you have one?
I don't really have one. Yeah. It's something I need to read more of. Mm-hmm. It's been a couple years since I've really read a lot of prose poetry. And I don't really have one yet, though mm-hmm. I'm sure I will.
Yeah.
Hopefully soon. It's something I need to work on expanding my knowledge of.
Yeah, you're already working well within the form. So
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, neat. Well, have you got one more short poem?
Probably.
All right.
This is a very sensual poem, and I really love representing the beauty and what it's like to interact with other people. And this is observed between two people in a restaurant. We are like left and right hands, connected by a tendril of awareness, unfamiliar with the feeling of each other. Waiting together for the climactic something, the wishing and receiving, the ointment of knowing there is a pursuit that solves itself, unforced and slow, the plunge into a practiced ecstasy. Somewhere above the city spires, there's a red evening climaxing, horizons to luscious fruit, translating flowers to lobule orbs. There are people to see it, who stoop in love to lick the naked body as though it were sap from a blossom. Here in the city, it's the encrusted street and the lavish heat that makes us wait, long for exchange, long after the rain has settled to sticky veil, with no one in particular. No one penetrates deep enough to dilute the humidity of longing, and few men have art to thin the excess of their swarming hearts.
Another nice piece.
Thank you very much.
Indeed. Well, this has been Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. Joining me today has been Hope Reinhart. Please join us again next week, and you can listen to the program again on Tuesday evening at 6 o'clock, Wednesday morning at 7, and it's available 24/7, of course, from the WPVM website as either a stream or a download podcast.